morning, everyone. Welcome
to the September 4th meeting of the Portland City Council. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Hales?
Here. We're going to begin this morning with a couple of celebrations. One for something that has happened every year for thousands of years, and that is that this evening is the first day of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. So on behalf of the whole community, the Jewish community that we celebrate, and all the other faiths in our community, Lashana Tova, best wishes for a new year. And then we're also here to celebrate something that has happened for the first time, that we hope it will happen every year. And with that, I'm going to ask Commissioner Fritz to read a proclamation from this city council in celebration of our thorns.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. It is absolutely my honor and joy to read this proclamation. Whereas Portland is proud to be home of the Portland Thorns FC, our women's professional soccer team, which chokes me right up. Somebody who grew up not even being able to watch women play, never mind play it myself. Whereas the Thorns joined the National Women's Soccer League in 2013 and were recognized internationally by the United States Soccer Federation, the Mexican Football Federation, and the Canadian Soccer Association. And whereas the Portland community and soccer fans nationwide celebrate our outstanding Thorns athletes, Rachel Bueller, Marion Doherty, Tina Ellison, Becky Edwards, Danielle Foxhoven, Adelaide Gay, Elizabeth Guess, Tobin Heath, Angie Kerr, Karina LeBlanc, Allie Long, Nikki Marshall, Alex Morgan, Emily O'Neill, Casey Ramirez, Mana Shim, Christine Sinclair, Nikki Washington, Tiffany Weimer, Courtney Wetzel, and Catherine Williamson. And I think it's really important to say each one of your names because you are a team, but each person played so magnificently all season. Whereas the Portland community and soccer fans nationwide have embraced the leadership of head coach Cindy Parlow Cohn, assistant coaches John Gallus and Nate Berry, trainer Sheila Tatsunami, and manager Megan Lovich, and whereas the Thorns completed their inaugural season tied for the league lead with 38 points, 11-6-5 overall. And whereas the Thorns drew an average of 13,320 fans to 11 home games at Jeldwyn Field, including 17,619 at the regular season home finale, which ranks among the top single game marks in the history of women's soccer in the United States. And whereas the Rose City Riveters supporters group is renowned as the biggest and best in women's soccer. And whereas the Thorns won the National Women's Soccer League Championship on September 1st, 2013, defeating the Western New York Flash by a score of 2-0 before 9,129 fans in Rochester, New York, and I don't know how many at the Baghdad and multiple other places in Oregon. Whereas this win was the first national championship by any major professional sports teams in Portland since the Trailblazers of 1977. Now, therefore, Charlie Hales, the mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, and Soccer City, USA, does hereby proclaim Wednesday, September 4th, 2013, to be a day of recognition for the Portland Thorns FC, champions of the National Women's Soccer League in Portland, and we encourage all residents to observe this day. Yay. So we are honored to be joined by three of the national champion Portland Thorns, known fondly to their fans as Kat, KK, and Mana. And they will talk to you a little bit about their experience in this inaugural season for the Portland Thorns.
Well, thank you to all the commissioners and the mayor for having us. It's pretty incredible to be living out our dreams every single day and get it recognized the way it has in Portland. It's been such an incredible city to play for. I mean, every single game we've stepped up on the field, it's brought a snare to tears just to see the love and passion from the people of Portland. And it gives us such pride when we get to put on that jersey and represent this incredible city, which we think is the best city in the world for what we do. And we just love it, and we're just so appreciative of it. So thank you very much.
That's it.
They're young.
Rookies.
You know how shy they are.
Come on.
I'm going to lose it. I can't say enough great things about this city and just the fact that we're here and being recognized by you folks. It's an incredible honor. And as my first year, I'm a rookie straight out of college. This is just beyond anything I could ever imagine as a professional soccer player. I really, really hope that other cities can follow our lead and see what we're doing here as a city and really bring women's soccer to another level in this country. So thank you.
To reiterate what both of them said, I mean, this experience has been unbelievable. Being a rookie as well, I wasn't sure what to expect. Other leagues had folded in the past, and, you know, we were hoping that this one would last. And, you know, our opening home game, bringing close to 18,000 people, I mean, that was something that I don't think many of us have experienced, even for the people that have been playing professionally. So I just want to say thank you, and I hope that the support continues.
Well, thank you for the joy, and indeed the support needs to continue because there's only one thing better than winning the inaugural season, and that's going to be winning it at home next year.
Yeah, that's right.
And I know that my colleagues on the council would like to say something else. Commissioner Fish.
First, I just want to thank Commissioner Fritz for bringing this proclamation forward. She is a season ticket holder, so how about a round of applause for your fans. One of your great fans. I just want to add two more comments. First, I went to a number of games this year with my daughter, who's a college junior. And Lord knows we need role models at this time in our history. And you could not ask for better role models than the young women on the field that she and I cheered for. So thank you for that as well. Thank you for being an inspirational role model for young girls across this country. And finally, Mayor, I just was reflecting on the fact that we're about 40 years away since Title IX was adopted. I'm not sure that when Title IX was adopted by Congress and signed by the President, someone foresaw that one day we'd have a women's professional soccer league. But the reality is that because of Title IX, young women in this country had a chance to fairly compete and pursue their dreams, something which my sister, who was pre-Title IX, did not have a chance. So I think we should recognize the great gift of Title IX that leveled the playing field, and now we have a league that gets the same fans here at home that the men's team does, and that was the dream. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Other comments, Steve or Dan? Well, we would be honored to take a picture with you here to conclude this morning, and we just want you to know that not just the five of us but the people in this room, but all of Portland is really proud of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think another of the things that I so appreciate about these young women is that after every single game, whether they won, lost, or drew, they went around and thanked their fans for being there. And so it's an example of you can do great things if you keep at it.
Great work. There's a community celebration at noon, and hope everyone gets to enjoy that as well. Okay, let's move to the council calendar and communications items, please. Carla.
Item 803, request of Renee Stevens to address council regarding corruption in the city and state.
Stevens? Here? Morning. Welcome.
Good morning. So, My name is Renee Stevens, and I'm here to talk about what I have experienced in this city and state. Now, my daughter was abused by the brother of a politician here, Rex Burkholder. I don't know if you all know that, but she was, and it's been covered up by every single level of the administration, not just in the city, but in the state, all the way up to the federal government. Okay? I mean, I also used to be a designer at Nike, and somebody tried to dry hump me up there, and I complained about it, and they freaking kicked me out. And they obliterated my career. I'm completely done. I have been doing my best as a responsible citizen to handle these issues, and I've been going through every level. I've gone to everyone. Okay, I've gone to the media. I've been shut down everywhere. And what I've recognized is that there's something very wrong going on here. There's something very wrong going on, not just with you. It's not just the leadership. What we've done here is we have created a place that doesn't care about people. We just care about money. And that's what I've experienced. Okay? My daughter did not matter, and she doesn't matter, because the people that harmed her are very wealthy, very powerful people. And so that's why the police department isn't working for her, and that's why the hospitals are not working for her. Because she was abused and because the hospitals did cover it up, she now is suffering from osteopenia, type 1 diabetes. She's got scoliosis. Something is wrong with her liver that I still can't get addressed by the hospitals. She's got kissing contusions. Those are bone bruises on her left knee where she was burned. She was not treated. OHSU, Providence, St. Vincent, these hospitals did not treat her. And they inserted some weird stuff into her medical record to make sure that this was covered up. Now, I've been bringing this to you. I've reported this to the police. I've reported this to the FBI. You know what I get? I get hung up on. I get told that I can't make reports. This is the administration of our society in this city. You know what I realize? You people are indescribably irresponsible. And you have absolutely no business administering society, because you don't understand what is important.
I want to thank you for coming today and make sure that we get you some access to some help. So I'll make sure that one of my staff before you leave today connects with you. So please do. And I know.
Oh, wait a second. I've been trying to come to you. I've been trying to talk to you. Well, I got kicked out by one of your staff members.
We'll make sure that you get
really
connected. So, no, we appreciate you coming forward.
No, no. Okay. I'm not done yet.
Well, you are, because there's a...
No, I'm not done. I am not done. I'm going to talk.
You need to...
There is something wrong with...
You've made your point very well.
No, I did. I have not made my point.
And you need to finish, because there's a time limit.
I will
so that
finish
other citizens
if you
can
stop
speak.
Interrupting me.
Okay,
please
do.
We are running society for the wrong reason. Okay? This is what I've come to understand over the past 6 years of dealing with this. We are running society to own things, but we should be running society to take care of people. And that's why my wife and I, Carolyn, we've established a new organization. It's called the Pay It Forward Leadership Society. And our goal is to get humanity on the right track. We need to start taking care of people. You should not be erecting fences. You should be taking care of people. Okay? Life has to matter, not money. Okay, money is an ideological construct that has been imposed on humanity, and we impose it on each other. And it's just not right. It's irresponsible. We're hurting people, and it doesn't matter. You just do things as money dictates. But
That's irresponsible. Okay. Because if we don't have life...
I do need you to finish.
I'm going to finish. Life has to be the most important aspect of existence. It has to be, because if you don't have life, we don't have any of this. Nothing is here. Money didn't build these buildings, or any of the technology here, or anything that is helping people. People did that. People are doing that. And I'm actually very disappointed in our society that doctors, respected members of our community, have to sit there and lie to my face. What type of leverage have we put these people under where they would lie about the health of a child?
Okay. Now we'll try
to a parent.
We'll try to get you some access.
Are you going to try? Because for the past six years, you have done nothing.
That guy right there, Chad Stover,
really?
Is on my staff.
I'm going to talk to Chad. But this movement that we've started, it's not going away.
Good.
It's going to get bigger. There are people here that care about people. I'm not saying that what we've done here is anybody's fault. But what I'm saying is there is a problem. And to recognize it and act in a manner that suggests that we are powerless to change it is irresponsible. It is not just your responsibility. It is everyone's responsibility here on this planet. Every single human being. We don't need a war in Syria. We need to be taking care of people. That's all we need to be doing. Because if we were taking care of people, you wouldn't have people trying to hurt other people. What we have is a condition where we are, human beings don't care at all, not just about other people, but they don't care about themselves.
You've done a good job.
Their value has been taken over by an imaginary piece of paper.
Sir, thank you.
Money doesn't exist.
You do need to stop because other people
exist.
Are here that...
There
are people here who've signed up to
understand,
testify.
I understand, sir. They need their chance. I understand.
Okay, they need their chance.
Please don't. Don't talk to me like that.
Well, I need to talk to you like that.
No,
there are other
you
people
actually
waiting.
Don't.
There are people
you
waiting,
just let me talk.
Sir. No,
you know what? I'm going to finish.
I'm not
going to
filibuster
I'm going to
here.
Finish.
There's a three-minute limit for a reason.
I'm going
we've been,
to finish, okay?
We've been very indulgent. I'm
going
to have to ask you to leave. Now,
are you
going to
have me called out by the police?
If we have to, and I'd really be sorry about that.
I would like to see that, actually.
I imagine you would.
Who's going to haul me away? Who is going to haul me away?
Sir, if you really want that, that's the only option. You may leave us.
Sir, you have had your time.
You've used your time.
Thank you.
Listen, we are not going away.
That's good, but you've used your time today.
We're going to get humanity back on the right track, and it's not just your responsibility.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you very much. Talk to Chad. Okay, Carla.
Item 804, request of Michael Wythe to address council regarding 10-year plan to end homelessness.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Good morning. It's actually Withy. And I've only got 3 minutes, so I'll make this quick. We've got an idea, several ideas to end homelessness in Portland. It's called the six-point plan. It mainly is going to be something that we looked into to save money in the long run, get more people indoors, whether it's sometimes even in a relief camp setting. So we're looking at masses as opposed to just a certain part of the homeless society. So the 6 points are, in a nutshell, eco-villages. We think that even though Bud Clark is a great building and they do great work, the $40 million could have housed 2,750 people permanently. So we would have saved a lot of hundreds of millions of dollars. So eco-communities are definitely the way to go. I do believe. Secondly, after Katrina, I had occasion to work alongside AmeriCorps. They set up relief camps in a very professional way, federally funded volunteers. We believe that a relief camp or several satellite relief camps might be a good option this winter for folks that want to get off the street and work. You wouldn't want to go there and hang out. You'll go there, you'll have a program that you have to follow. It's a 90-day program. That'll get you off the street. We also think that the last time the church has asked City Council to address the issue with folks that were traveling through and needed a place to sleep at night, that they be allowed to pop tents in the parking lots at night. I believe City Council passed it if they have cars. We want to look at that issue, see if it's possible, feasible, that outside of the realm of people's, let's say, low-key areas where these might be acceptable. So these overnight camps wouldn't be somewhere you'd go to socialize. You go there, you get in your tent, you go to sleep. It'll be supervised by the people who own the parking lot and hold the lease, so they'd have insurance and port-a-johns. So the fourth thing is, we don't believe that investing in large, expensive shelters is really the answer. So we think the money should go, and the buildings that already exist that could be remodeled through volunteer services and donated building materials, so we could save millions that way. There's also, and I think you might not like this, Ms. Fritz, but we do have Dodge Park. It's a campground. It's in Clackamas County. It's closed October through May, I do believe. You would know this. You were the commissioner of parks. But we believe that if we reseed in the spring, if it's run responsibly through a nonprofit that can have security, we see no reason why people that are responsible can't utilize that area for a campground during the winter months. But we also believe that we could rent some land and maybe legally operate a campground that could be also secured. So that'd be number five. Number six is, none of this is going to work unless we work on the issue, the core issues of homelessness. And for every person that's out there that's homeless, there's an issue. So it's going to be extremely complicated. That's the complicated part of homelessness, is how everyone is their own issue. That's how they got homeless. So that's why it's so hard to wrap your head around. There's just so many different variances of it. So those are the six things that we think would make a difference. All of those things are imperative. The sixth point, again, let me sort of reiterate. It's going to have to concentrate on employment, education, rehab in some cases. But all first of these five answers all need to have the sixth element, which is sort of a reconditioning of the people that come in for help. Not reconditioning in an essence of trying to rethink life, but get them the help they need. Maybe explore with them their potential. Entrepreneurship programs should be included in that too. So everywhere you go in the first five points, you're gonna see that sixth point, which is the most important, how to keep people off the street. Get them off the street, but keep them off the street. So.
Great. Well, thank you. I appreciate you and other advocates coming forward with creative ideas. Frankly, I'm not sure that they'll all work, but I think some of them will. And that's what it's going to take, is both the agencies of the city and the county and others that are responsible for trying to house people, and folks in the community coming up with creative ideas and trying to make things work. I've certainly seen evidence, you know, in recent efforts in the community, particularly Right to Dream 2, where a small amount of money and a small number of people are making a difference in a way that was never officially sanctioned, quite the right. contrary, by the city. So I'm open to those kinds of creative ideas and doing them in a way that's sustainable and legal. And I know that's the sense of the council as well. So I just want to thank you for being creative and constructive and continuing to throw out ideas, some of which will work.
Now, I've got a question for you in final. We would like to see if you would be interested in setting up a new committee separate from the 10-year committee to end homelessness. They're a very conventional way of dealing with homelessness. We're sure that they'll always be in business. Right. But we've got a lot of other people that are homeless that are not included in their realm. They're not chronically homeless. So we believe that a new committee should be constructed to look into not just these six points, but any other point that anybody can come up with.
Yeah, I'm personally interested in that, and certainly we'll talk with Commissioner Saltzman, who's in charge of the Housing Bureau, and you know, again, look for a way to, in a kind of an orderly, regular way, to get these kind of ideas under consideration and talked about. So appreciate that, and let us get back to you about that suggestion as well.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
Item 805, request of Crystal Ilinski to address council regarding ecological justice and human rights.
Crystal here? Crystal. Okay, we'll see if she comes in later. Next one, please.
806, request of Joe Walsh to address council regarding justice.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. You just heard a really good presentation by Michael. And in conversations with Michael and other people that are out on the street, what they're saying is those 6 points are not written in stone. What they're asking you to do is to consider them, but also be creative in the sense to set up a committee that includes the homeless and houseless people. Every study that I've read, the recommendations say put the homeless on the committee. And yet we don't do that. We spend millions of dollars, but we don't have a committee where you ask the very people that you're going to serve, what is it that you need? And it is a complicated issue because the needs are different. Let me tell you a short story. There are two gentlemen that are living on the street right now that have enough money to pay rent. They get something like $2,000 a month, which is, you can pay rent on that. They can't get past the credit rating. So when they go to get an apartment, they do a credit check, and it costs them $40 or $50 to do it. They lose the $40 or $50 because they can't get past the credit check. There is nothing in the system that can help them. That's what they've been told about it. What is it, 211 emergency call? They've given up. They've said, we cannot help you. Here are two people that can pay rent and our system and commissioners. You spend millions of dollars, but we can't get them into an apartment. That's an indicator we are failing terribly. That's why when Michael says, set up this committee, and all the studies tell you, set up this committee and include the homeless. You've heard Lightning. You heard Michael. You heard other people come before you with good ideas. And you always say that, Mayor. Well, that's a good idea. When are you going to do the committee? That's what I want to know. When are you going to really do something and say, we can do something about what's going on. Let's ask the people that are involved. Because you got very bright people. Thank you. Don't ask advocates to be on this committee like me. Don't ask. You have to have people that feel the pain of the rain on their heads at night as a cop kicks them to wake them up. That's who you need on that committee. Not me.
Thank you. Well said. 807.
Request of Chris Johnson to address council regarding a failure to rezone Arrow Creek properties.
Chris, you here? And did Ms. Zielinski come in? Okay, if not, we'll give them a chance to come back and move on to consent calendar. Are there any items that have been removed? I don't think so.
We have a...
Any requests?
We have a public request to remove 819.
819. Okay, let's pull 819 to the regular calendar. Any other requests? If not, roll call on the balance of the consent calendar.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Mayor, I want to especially acknowledge we're reappointing 4 members to the RAC board. And by tradition, we put this in consent. But I want to just thank Philip Hilaire, Jesse Beeson, Kyra Higgs, and Verlia Briggs for agreeing to serve. And I know if they were here, the council as a whole would thank them for their service.
Aye.
Important work.
Hales.
Aye. Thank you. Okay, let's take up 822, and then we'll come back to 819 after the regular calendar. I'm sorry, not 822. Where's the first regular item?
835.
835, accept a grant in the amount of $15,000 and appropriate $7,500 for fiscal year 2013-14 for the Oregon Department of Transportation, Transportation Safety Division 2013-15 Work Zone Enforcement Photo Radar Project for sworn personnel overtime.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Commissioners and Mayor. I'm Mike Krebs. I'm the Assistant Chief of the Portland Police Bureau. Today we have several items on the agenda, and I brought the experts in all of those. And on my right is Todd Davis, on my left is Aaron Smith, and they're going to talk about the first one.
Good morning, Mayor Hales and City Council members. Sergeant Davis from the Traffic Division. The first grant we're going to ask is a grant from the Oregon Department of Transportation for enhanced photo radar enforcements in ODOT work zones. ODOT wants to do a test project to gauge the effectiveness of photo radar in these work zones as opposed to traditional enforcement. And they want to do this also in this fiscal year. We're expecting that the legislature is going to approve that photo radar can be used on state or on interstate freeways. So it will also encompass a test project to see the effectiveness of that. As of right now, we're only allowed to use it on state highways and on surface street work zones. So part of this grant is for a project on PAL that is underway, and the rest of that grant will be for future use on I-5 or I-205.
Great. Questions, Council, or Sergeant Davis, or anyone else? And Carl is going to check and see if we have anyone signed up. You know, we are down in Part 1 crimes. We are down in homicide. We are down in gang violence, thanks to good work by the Police Bureau, good work by crime prevention staff, good work by the community, and maybe some factors outside of our control. But the one thing we're not down in, unfortunately, is traffic deaths. And unfortunately, we've been keeping Sergeant Davis's team too busy dealing with fatal accidents and serious crashes across the community in all modes, bicycles, cars, pedestrians. The one biggest factor, we talked about this the last time the council was looking at these issues, is alcohol, but it's not the only factor. So photo radar is one more tool and a pretty important one. Anyone signed up to testify on this?
Two people signed up, Joseph Gordon and Jesse Angel.
Okay, hang on for a second. Commissioner Saltzman.
Well, I actually do have a question. So if you have a photograph of somebody through your photo radar and they are seen texting or talking on the cell phone, are you able to issue an additional citation?
Unfortunately, right now, the way the law reads, we're not allowed to enforce any secondary offenses for photo radar, just the speed enforcement or the red light violation.
Really? Are you aware of any efforts in Salem to change that?
I don't think there's any right now that would probably have to move forward from us.
Well, let's flag that as a potential legislative proposal from the City of Portland next session. You know, if you're violating more than one law, seems to me you ought to be able to get more than one ticket.
We have a lot of photos with cell phone use taking place, believe me.
I'd love to hear the defenses on that.
Yeah.
I was shaving while I was driving. What is the current law is, if you have a phone in your car and it goes off, you are required to get off the road, park the car, turn off your car, and then you can take the call. Is that right?
If you have a Bluetooth and you can do it completely hands-free, you'd be allowed to do that. But you're not allowed to manipulate the phone in your hand while you're operating your car.
So you really have to be parked with the engine off, and then you can take that call?
I'm not sure you need to go as far as having the engine off, but you need to not be driving on the street. If you pull off to the side of the road and take care of that phone call, you'll be fine.
And then I guess the exception is if you're on the Banfield or another road and you see behavior that, like a drunk driver weaving, my understanding from Mike Reese is that that's one of the exceptions where you are allowed to make a 911 call.
There's an emergency exception in the law.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, gentlemen. Why don't you give way because we've got some folks to testify, and we'll bring you back up on the other items. So you had two people signed up, Carla?
I think they've left the room.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Hi, it's me, Veronica. I'm back from the outfield.
Oh, wait a second. I need to do that. Trying to get myself settled. Okay, good. Yesterday I walked 20 miles in Portland, and I just wanted to say this about that.
Good morning, Charles Hales. I really like seeing you here this morning. I've come back from the outfield. I'm in the infield, and I have to say this about that. Portland's okay. It's a walkable city. It's a doable city. There's a few schools that need help right now. Okay, one is the Wallace School. I don't know what happened. I didn't read the newspaper. I don't listen to the radio or TV. I don't own a TV, so I really don't know. But on the street, you can feel the air is crackling with excitement and reactivity. And I don't know what did happen, except that there was something that did occur. Whenever you have a community of people that is so fluid as that, the pipeline, the grapevine, goes. But I want to support these men in blue, Portland's finest, and the chief, you know, the chief at this time, for the work that they're doing in breaking down the city into bite-sized pieces. It's so important. No one person, the mayor, can do the job. Not one person. Not Commissioner Amanda Fritz, although you're doing a great job, Amanda. I don't know how you do it. No, working so hard on the weekends and then coming in and doing the city council. Okay. But for the mayor and Commissioner Dan Saltzman and Commissioner Nick Fish, you're doing a great job with your new work. And Commissioner Dan Saltzman, pretty good with the historic homes and supporting the National Audubon Society and the wild bird sanctuaries. I've picked up more birds along the way, and I've watched the flights of birds in the parks, and it's a very healthy city. I just want to underscore that. We need more police. I just have to say this. And it doesn't have anything to do with the topic, but we just need more, I think. And the biggest shift to be covered is probably 11 to 7. It's not a 1987 clock like former Mayor Vera Katz, but they need to have more people on foot patrol. It's shoe leather epidemiology that gets it, okay? Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Go
Thanks
ahead.
For coming.
It's
Thank
good.
You. Is there anyone else? If not, unless there are any further questions, this is an emergency ordinance, and we'll take a roll call.
Saltzman? Saltzman.
Hi.
Sorry. Novick?
I think that photo radar is an extremely useful tool. I mean, drunk drivers kill, but basically speed kills. And I know that some people think that photo radar is somehow unfair, but I think it is accurate, and people being killed by people speeding is really unfair. So I'm pleased to vote aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Hales.
Let's flag that item for future legislative advocacy along with anything else that you're able to bring, scroll up for us in the next few months, because it's not that long till the next session of the legislature, and that seems like common sense to me. Thanks. Aye. Okay, next one.
Item 836, accept a grant in the amount of $130,219 and appropriate $65,110 for fiscal year 2013-14 for the Oregon Department of Transportation, Transportation Safety Division, 2013-15 Work Zone Enforcement Program for Sworn Personnel Overtime.
We're back again. Mike Krebs once again from the Chief's Office. On my left, I'll have Aaron Smith, a Sergeant of Traffic, speak about the ordinance.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. Aaron Smith, Sergeant, Portland Police Bureau, Traffic Division. And this particular grant goes towards enforcement in the various work zones that ODOT has currently, or the ones that pop up through the 2013 to 2015 biennium. Currently, there is two active work zones, including I-5 at the Iowa Viaduct, and then there's also the Selwood Bridge reconstruction. And this grant would allow for actual officers to be in those work zones, enforcing the laws and making sure that everybody's driving safe, especially when they do have personnel out there working actively in the work zones.
And this is just to compensate us for that work in ODOT's work zones, not our own, right?
Yes, sir.
We pay for our own ourselves.
Correct.
But ODOT pays us to do extra level of enforcement in their work zone.
This will be extra patrols, so officers will be working outside the regular work hours, and ODOT will compensate us for that.
Can I ask a question, Mayor?
Please.
Since we got the experts here and the Transportation Commissioner, I just got back from a vacation where I was down in Los Angeles delivering my daughter to college, and I noticed that and it's a city that's constantly in construction mode, mostly around the highways mm-hmm. and the roads. And I noticed that at rush hour, at really messy intersections, there were one or two people who were there to direct the traffic and deal with the problems, and that at construction sites there are also generally people, and they look like uniformed people. I don't know that they were carrying a gun, but they looked very official and uniform. Now we don't have that in Portland. I'm not as aware of having folks at difficult intersections at rush hour or construction sites. Is there a reason that we don't do that? And if we do, am I just missing it?
I'll put Aaron in.
Well, the laws are different depending on the states. In Oregon, they don't allow for that type of uniform presence unless it's extra patrols in the work zone. So there isn't that element. But in other states, they do have different laws governing the work zones, how they will patrol them or how they will staff those work zones. I know that in New York, typically any area that's under construction, it's mandated that they have a uniform presence there in the work zone.
There's a certain irony in that because you often see signs in work zones that say traffic fines double or urge you to use a special caution. I'm not sure that often that message often gets through to drivers who are in a rush.
Right.
And whether it's a officer that is fully equipped or whether it's someone who is in traffic safety, my sense is there's a very beneficial value there of having someone, particularly at intersections that are a mess with a construction site. So you're saying we have to change state law to authorize Portland police to put someone at an intersection?
Well, to make it mandatory. I mean, otherwise it's up to us to know where the work zones are currently being worked, and if we have the personnel to place in those areas, then we can. But you're absolutely correct. It's people don't really notice those orange and black signs until they come right up to where the flaggers are, the workers are. And that's why grants like this are important, because we're able to put officers there for that visible presence to get them to slow down either prior to coming into the work zone or as they're leaving. It makes the awareness that much more present for those drivers when they see those uniform officers.
Is it a wild and fanciful idea to shift the cost to whoever is doing the work and have them contract, require that at least at rush hour and at times when there's a heavy traffic, that they pick up the cost and just do an IGA with the police or the sheriff or whomever?
Commissioner Fish, actually, the city of Seattle has that exact agreement in place. I think it is through a city ordinance. Any construction project in the city of Seattle requires a uniformed police officer present. I'm talking apartment complex going up, a business office, or a road project, and it is specified that the cost of that officer will be borne by the developer or the people behind that project.
And that's when they're in the right-of-way, when they're working in the right-of-way?
We're talking if they're building a building, you'll see a Seattle police officer with a hard hat and orange vest standing at the front door.
Mayor, maybe this is not the right time and place to go deeper into this, but I will say that having Los Angeles is a city of 3.5 million, and obviously it's much more spread out, but it was striking to me at all the major construction sites, there was someone in uniform in control managing the traffic, and my guess, this is just anecdotal, my guess is there's a big safety bump because of it. And perhaps that's something we may want to consider, the range of options, including whether that becomes a cost that is borne by whoever is doing the construction.
That's how it is in Boston. I have a friend that works there, and the same kind of thing. If you build a road or you take the right-of-way, you have to hire police officers to make sure that particular intersection or that right-of-way is safe. So I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, good discussion. Let's get a look at those other ordinances when you have a chance and explore that topic, later on in the fall. We had the very tragic experience of losing one of our city PBOT workers to a traffic accident when I was commissioner in charge of transportation. And, you know, it's a serious danger when you've got people that are otherwise concentrating on construction work.
Mm-hmm.
That's their job, in the right-of-way, separated from cars by orange cones.
Yeah, and
it's dangerous.
And we're talking about, just to be clear, I don't want to diminish the role played by flaggers.
Right.
But flaggers generally are there to, once there's two lanes have been reduced to one, they're there to tell you to slow down and let you know when you can pass.
Correct.
I'm talking about managing intersections that become really gummed up because of, and particularly rush hour. And there, in most cities that I've visited, there are people in uniform. Now, they may not be fully equipped. They may be from a separate division, but they have experience in managing the traffic flow and impact.
We'll take a look at that and see if we can put something together.
Good. Thank you. Other questions?
Commissioner, I would just like to note that, I mean, on projects that are purely city projects, such as, for example, some of the sewer projects that occurred over the summer in Southeast, we did, within the context of the limited budgets all around, you know, work very closely with the police bureau to ensure that appropriate safety measures were taken. The police bureau was very, you know, don't want to say aggressive, but very diligent in patrolling areas where people were urged to take detours to ensure that people weren't speeding through the local neighborhood streets, for example. So where we, you know, within the limited budgets on all sides, we do what we can. Although, I mean, we should constantly be reevaluating and seeing where resources are best deployed.
Thank you.
Good. Helpful. Thank you. Anyone signed up on this, Carla?
I believe they are not back in the room yet, Joseph and Jesse.
Okay. So not here? All right. Thanks, gentlemen. Let's just take a roll call. Keep you. Do we have another one of yours here? Let's see. No, next one's not you, right?
We got all of them are ours the next little while here.
Okay, then stick around. Let's take a roll call on those.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, and do we need to combine any of these, which is something I should have thought about before, but next one is they're all burn grants, right?
Yeah, we have all the folks here to testify.
So why don't we do the three burn grant items, 838. Why don't you read 838, 839, 840?
Okay. Bob Delghese.
And Carla, go ahead and read those, if you would. We'll do all three of those at once.
We're skipping 837 then?
I'm sorry. No, 837 first, and then I got ahead of myself. 837 first, and then we'll do the other three as a group. Yeah. Sorry.
837.
Yeah.
Amend contract with Multnomah County to extend the term through December 31, 2013, and increase the contract value in the amount not to exceed $5,416.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm George Burke. I'm the commander of the Detective Division, Portland Police Bureau. And back in October of 2011, we received a DOJ grant that was focused on intellectual property crimes, which really focuses on counterfeiting of properties and infringing on goods. We just recently received an extension to spend those grants up until December 31st of this year. In that process, we asked for reappropriation of some of the grant funds, and part of that was to provide $5,416 that would go to the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office to help with the prosecution of the crimes associated with intellectual property crimes. So I did bring Sergeant Vic Doty over to explain in more detail what those kind of crimes are, if you're interested in hearing what those are.
And are we? Yeah, I am, and want to hear about that. And are we seeing an upsurge? How are we dealing with this issue?
Intellectual property crimes are basically copyright infringement or counterfeit type goods, anywhere from health and safety, like batteries we've seen, pharmaceuticals we've seen, to just basic goods like T-shirts, jeans, purses. And most of what we see around here is on the internet. We don't see a lot of over-the-counter stuff like you see in New York or L.A. There is some, and we've dealt with some of that. But the internet, we are seeing an uptick in sales over the internet of this type of stuff.
Thank you. Questions?
Mayor, I believe there's a substitute to amend the title so that it's easy to find on a future e-file search.
And do we have a motion for the substitute?
So I move that we substitute that only the title, nothing else has changed, and the title would now read, amend an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County to extend the FFY 2011 intellectual property crime enforcement program grant period in order to reimburse the county for a deputy district attorney. And the rest is the same.
Okay.
Second.
Thank you. Roll call on substituting the new version.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you to your staff for working with me on that. Aye.
Bish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Is there anyone signed up to testify on this?
We have two people, Hercules and David Bentley.
They here? Okay, so gentlemen, yield the floor, and we'll let these fellows come forward. Please, come on up. Thank you. Good morning.
Hello.
Morning, welcome. Just give us your name, and you've got 3 minutes.
My name is Hercules, and I've never done anything like this before.
Okay. Welcome.
Him too?
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, we're talking about the property thing, right? Okay. I'm a little nervous. Well, all I have right now with my property is sitting outside on the curb right now, which is just a tarp, a couple blankets, and, you know, a couple duffel bags, a little bit of clothes, just a little bit. And I've lost everything throughout my entire life. I'm 20 years old, and I've never actually had anything. I've grown up pretty poor. My family has actually lost everything. My mother's disabled and lives with her family, her mother and her father. My little brother is 18, and he is homeless now as well and has nothing. And then I have a little sister, but she's 15 and lives with her father somewhere on the other side of the country, and I don't know her. But I've been through a lot in my life. I've seen a lot, you know, and every morning we're waking up by the officers. Every morning they either, you know, they're kicking us awake or, you know, doing something in some harassment of a way. And they always make us want to move our property all the time, everywhere we go, you know, and it's not very much. And sometimes when they do try to arrest us, they take our property. And then sometimes it's harder for us to get all our property back. And, you know, understanding that this is the only property we have. We've already lost everything, and we don't want to lose anything else. And all we're asking for lately now is just a place to call home, a place where we can go, a place where we can truly belong, and everyone can just get together and be one. I'm not just talking about all of us. I'm talking about all of you, all the police, everybody, because we are all equal, and no matter whatever, you know. And I don't see it right now. The other day, I was assaulted and falsely charged by an officer. And I know I'm in trial for that right now, and I don't know what's going to happen. I know the officers are lying about everything, about how it all happened and what they did to me. And I'm not sure what's going to happen. It's kind of scary. I have a clean record. I've never been in trouble with the law before this, and I'm not sure what's going to happen. But I just don't want to lose anything of mine. I don't want anyone to lose anything of theirs because it's the last thing we got. But no, just know this, though, that no one can bring us down anymore because we're already sitting on the ground. The only thing we can do now is rise, and we will not go anywhere until someone will recognize. And that's all I can say.
Thanks. Thanks for coming forward. Good morning.
Morning. Like him, I've never done anything like this, and I wasn't really sure what to sign up under. But me and my wife ended up on the streets because our landlord didn't pay his mortgage. The house is now boarded up. It's owned by a foreign bank. It's got grass taller than me. And we were told by DHS that they can't take your kids if you're homeless. But this is the reason they took our kids almost 3 weeks ago. Just because we're homeless, they took our three babies. I have until the 10th to try to come up with a place. And honestly, I'm disabled. I've got my babies. If I get into a place, they'll give me back my babies. But all these subsidized housing things have got 2-year waiting lists. There's no preference for a disabled family with children. There's no preference. I'm going to lose my babies. I can't get off the streets. I get Social Security. I can only afford like $500 max. But I'm going to lose all three of my little boys because I can't find a place. Something's got to be done about this. It's not all right. And as far as ODOT wanting all this money, If they're here to just open up the properties underneath the bridges, let people set up tents, stop spending so much going through and stealing everybody's stuff, and, you know, just being jerks to everybody and saying, you can't be here, they'd open up their properties, then they'd have to spend less on cleanup and everything else and security, and that'd give them more money to be able to have officers at construction zones. Just add something to that whole thing. I don't know what else I can say. I'm hurting over my babies, and there doesn't seem to be anything I can do.
I appreciate you having the courage to come here today, and I want to ask you to connect up with that young man in the back corner there who might be able to connect you with some folks who can help. So appreciate you doing this. Thank you for being here.
And I add my thanks for you for coming in, because there's a lot of people who don't understand that many people are in a situation that could be just like yours, that the one unfortunate incident, like your landlord losing his home, and then you're homeless with your family. So thank you for coming in to share your story. It matters.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Hope something comes out of it.
I do too. Thank you for coming. Okay, anyone else?
That's all who signed up.
Okay, so then we're ready for a roll call on that item, and then we'll take the other three. All right.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, now if you'd read the next three that are the burn grants.
838, accept a grant in the amount of $464,582 and appropriate $360,000 for fiscal year 2013-14 from the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, fiscal year 13, Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program to prevent and reduce crime and violence. 839, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County for the use of the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, fiscal year 2013, Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program funds. And 840, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the City of Gresham, Oregon, for the use of U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, fiscal year 2013, Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistant Grant Program funds.
Okay, welcome.
Good morning. Mike Krebs again. I'll turn over to Bob Delghese. He's one of our analysts in the fiscal division.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Bob Delghese, and I work for Fiscal Services and Business Operations Manager. And I'm going to address items 838, 839, and 840. They're interrelated. These regard the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program fiscal year 2013 award. On July 9, 2013, the City of Portland applied to the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance for the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program fiscal year 2013 solicitation. The 2013 JAG funds are made under disparate certification to the City of Portland, Multnomah County, and the City of Gresham. The JAG solicitation required the City to submit a joint application for the aggregate eligible allocation to all disparate municipalities and also to act as the fiscal agent for this grant. The DOJ has notified the City that it will award a grant in the amount of $464,582 with no match requirement. The award's allocated as follows. The City of Portland will receive $228,587. Multnomah County will receive $179,604. And the City of Gresham will receive $56,391. Intergovernmental agreements must be executed with Multnomah County and the City of Gresham in order to obligate agency roles and responsibilities. These are addressed in items 839 and 840 on this agenda. This public governing body review of the grant award and the related intergovernmental agreements provides an opportunity for public comment and involvement, which satisfies a requirement of the JAG grant. Portland Police Bureau will use $228,587 in JAG funding for the following two items. First is to retain one full-time equivalent senior management analyst position for a period of 17 months at a total cost of $128,587. The senior management analyst will facilitate the development